This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Hello, everyone. Happy Friday. Actually, if you're listening to this on Friday, one of us is at one track and one's at another.
We're at both coasts.
You're right. We're on opposite coasts. How did this happen? This is what we've done to ourselves. I am currently at Laguna Seca and Paul is currently at Sebring. So Sebring. If you're nearby, come by. And then keep in mind, this coming Sunday morning, Paul and Chance are hosting a Cars and Coffee at New Jersey Motorsports Park in, guess where, New Jersey. But you will have flown into Philly?
Fly into Philly first and then drive south to NJMP and we'll be there 9 to 11 Sunday morning. We'll be there for the whole track day and that's our Northeast region. They're putting on a 6th and 7th track day, 2 days at New Jersey Motorsports Park for Hooked on Driving. And then we'll be there. We'll have a Cars and Coffee. So come on down. We'd love to see you and say hello. And you can see the track day operations. You can see the tracks and how the track day runs.
Yeah, yeah.
And would love to have you sign up in the future as well. Spring cleaning is here. That means it's time to take that summer or performance car out of the garage and get it ready for driving season with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that will keep your brake temperatures low while resisting rust. Included in that kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all that nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com and fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to find complete kits and components for your car. Join us and thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicles into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop is brake upgrades made easy. We're jumping right into car debates. We've got Luke writing in from Tennessee, and coming up in a few minutes, we have Scott writing in as well. They've got more than two cars each, so there's much to talk about here.
Luke, thank you for writing. He's got a different conversation for us. Instead of writing to us about what car to add to the garage, he wants to know on which one he should remove.
Interesting. Okay.
Luke is married. He's early 30s. No kids, but probably growing a family soon. Their commutes are 9 and 13 miles for his wife. And they're close to the Blue Ridge Mountains, but not where snow is frequent enough to care. Luke has a 2012 STI hatchback.
Okay.
He tuned it up in his early 20s like you would expect any kid to do. It shoots flames.
That this is my favorite part. And then he says, after it shoots flames, I don't vape, I promise. Which I think is hysterical. You said that it has 370 pound-feet of torque at the wheels.
That's a lot.
And then you said that the interior is great for runs to the hardware store, which I read in to say the interior is not in great shape. It's just hard plastic. It's been driven and dealt with hard, but it is a hatchback. You think it might be worth 16 grand, maybe. That's car one.
I'm guessing he's got a lot of parts and money put into this car.
And I'm not sure it's worth that much, but maybe. It depends on the actual, because we've talked about this before. You really can't sell your tuned car for as much as you could a car that in the exact same condition was stock.
Yeah,
So you have a tuned car. And then the secondary problem is you talk about the interior is great for the hardware store. For home projects, that tells me the interior is not in great shape.
Yeah, throw it all
in. So it may be a problem as well. I mean, this is what I love about the hatchback, though. That's great.
He's also got a 2013 BRZ that he bought after the STI. And after doing so, he hasn't taken the STI in the mountains since. That's amazing.
Let me stop there real quick, because keep in mind, 2013 BRZ, which means first year, first gen. So not powerful at all.
Although we don't know. I don't think he's done anything to it. I don't think he's tuned it.
Doesn't sound like it.
He doesn't indicate it, but we wouldn't put it past Luke.
But here's the trick, though. You're comparing that to a 370 pound-feet of torque at the wheels STI, and your takeaway is the BRZ is the mountain car.
We couldn't agree more.
Low horsepower BRZ is definitely the mountain car for sure.
He values this at about $10,000. He says it's the first actual sports car and a great daily. But then we get to the third car.
Mm-hmm.
He also owns a Lotus Elise. It's a 2005, which is 1 year older than yours, Todd,
yes,
correct?
That was the first year they were sold in the U.S. It's interesting because he says he bought it right after the BRZ. And after he bought the Lotus Elise, he stopped taking the BRZ to the mountains. Mm. So I like the progression here. The STI was the mountain fun car. And then the BRZ went, no, this is better. And then the Lotus went, no, what are you saying? So the BRZ doesn't even get mountain duty anymore.
Well, Luke says it was a steal of a purchase. It had high miles, but clean title. And he said, we might be familiar with this concept. Mm-hmm. He's imagining a value of about $30,000, but his personal value that Todd can definitely relate to, it's like nothing else. Mm. And he and his wife drove it on their wedding night, and the wedding dress was folded into the passenger seat of an Elise.
So what you're saying is this was your car you left your wedding in. That's what you're saying.
That's really cool.
And you see, this is always a thing. When the bride and groom decide to drive themselves away, especially if they're car people, they always try to get an interesting car. Mm-hmm. And I've seen people get cars that, I mean, I remember going to a wedding once where the guy hadn't driven manual in forever. And of course, he had a classic Corvette that was manual, which meant he stalled it, which meant everyone made fun of him. I've seen all of this. But what happens invariably is the car you picked, unless you leave in a limo, it's not dress approved. There is no way you're going to have your bride climb into this car with all of that dress easily. And you did it in a Lotus Elise, or had her do it in a Lotus Elise.
Yeah, and she still did. Wow. And number four, the car number four is a 2018 Stinger GT2.
That's her car.
It's her car, value of about $25,000. That's her daily. She likes it. But here's the problem. They made a spreadsheet. They made a spreadsheet.
We got four cars already, and as a result of the spreadsheet, they bought another car.
The spreadsheet won, though. It convinced them to jump on the cheapest lease in the USA to get an Ioniq 6 for 24 months.
Okay, that is the strange-looking sedan, Ioniq sedan.
So you've got five cars right
five
now.
Cars,
you need to get rid of something, maybe one, two, three, or four cars. Just
who
kidding.
Knows?
But they said it felt like a great way to dip their toes into the EV experience.
Okay.
And they need to sell cars. They think selling a few cars might be a good idea. And in 2 years, when the lease is up, Luke can use this money for whatever the priority is at that time in their lives, whether it be a larger car, a quicker EV, if they end up liking the ownership experience, or any number of 3 to 5 year old used enthusiast cars like a second gen 86, GR86, a manual Supra, a GR Corolla, Caymans. The list gets endless at that point.
Yeah, it does for sure.
But he also suggests a Genesis product because he says he'll be old and cranky about his back.
No, you won't. But okay, yes.
Hopefully right. not. Yeah, who's to say what the future holds? How would we prepare? Wow, Luke, thank you for this. It's rare that people want to get rid of cars.
Agreed, yes.
I mean, you've got your own little car collection, you realize. And
it's
that
very
is,
cool.
That is the goal in life. We all want a car collection, but you might not have the space to store it. And clearly, they don't get driven enough. I mean, it's just the two of you for right now.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
And I like that you're not writing about, hey, we're starting a family in 5, 10 years or something, and then we need something now.
We're not pregnant yet, but we think we'll have kids, so maybe we'll buy a 7-seater. You don't do that. Yeah.
Right. And I'm curious as to why you went after the cheapest lease in the U.S. What did that fill? What part of the spreadsheet did this check off?
I would have expected, when I read this the first time, I had to kind of go back because I would have expected that cheapest lease in America would have replaced a car, but it didn't.
Well, it is. That's why he's writing to us.
Well, it is now, but at the time, it was an added car. It was a fifth car, which is craziness. I think we do need to pare this group down a bit. I think I've solved it.
Oh, you have?
I think I've solved it.
Okay, let's hear it.
But here's the thing I love about this is I love your sports car driver progression here. I love that you had an STI hatchback and good roads in your area, and you were like, this is the thing. And then you got the low-power BRZ and was like, why would I take the STI? This is one of the things that's so interesting to me, is once you discover lightweight and good handling, it's hard to fight that.
You had a BRZ, and you went to the Lotus after that.
Yes, I did.
He did your progression.
Yes, exactly.
Or you did his, or something.
And then you got that Lotus, and were like, well, this is a whole new thing. So I love that progression. It's very cool. I like all of your cars are interesting in their own right, but we know the Ioniq is not going away because you're locked into that lease. So that stays. So I'm just dealing with the other four in the short term.
Right,
okay. Because the Ioniq is going to time out and then you're going to have new decisions. Okay.
Right.
So
life could change at that point. Like you said, Luke,
the ones you get rid of here are the BRZ because it's been outdone in its exact specialty by the Lotus. And the Stinger, because that has where you have the most value. You're looking at long-term buys and you want to figure out where your money goes. Because here's the thing. I don't think the STI is worth as much as you think it is. And
it's hard to put a price
also
on that.
Also, the fact that it is used as a utility vehicle for you already. You have the rare STI hatchback. So you have the fun, you have the history with it, and it also is your bang-around car. I need to do stuff for the house. It's what you say here. So you keep it as the utility vehicle. You keep the Lotus because you outdid the BRZ with it.
Because it's a Lotus.
Yeah, exactly. And you have the Ioniq. These are your three cars that you're left with. Now, I understand if your wife takes the Ioniq, what do you commute in? Well, you could commute in the STI or you could commute in the Lotus. You go 9 miles to work. Commute in the Lotus. And if the weather is too bad for the Lotus, you commute in the STI. It's 9 miles to work. That's nothing. So then you've sold the Stinger, and that's actually the car you get the most value out of, and you've sold the BRZ, which you've outdone anyway. You probably walk with $30,000+, and then in 2 years when the Ioniq lease is up, you have options, and you have money.
That's interesting. I went a different direction, though. Okay. Because of that STI, I feel like it's still sitting there, and I feel like for you to like it more, you feel like you're going to have to keep putting money into it.
Well, that's sadly probably true.
You've had it through your 20s and you've had it through a phase of your car ownership life, but it sits clearly.
Yeah,
I don't
it does,
think you,
for sure.
I think you barely drive this car.
I think you're right.
Yeah. I think it mostly sits, even though it's probably pretty capable and you could drive it all weather anytime. Mm-hmm. But then you've got these other options that as soon as you start driving it, you'll turn around and go home and park it and get in another car because you can.
Yeah.
You've got these other options. And so for you to like it more, for it to stay around, I feel like you're looking at it longingly going, all right, if I keep it, I'm going to have to keep going down the path you've already created, which is dump more money into it to tune it to do what?
Maybe.
You've already got 370 pound-feet of torque at the wheel, which is a lot of power in this
car. Yeah, you'll be fine. Uh-huh.
So adding power isn't the answer. Adding brakes, I'm sure it brakes fine. I'm sure it handles really well. Yeah, it's the hardware store car, but I think any of these others could be used for the hardware store. That GT2 Stinger has a very big hatch.
It does. It does.
Get some cargo liners.
Yes,
for sure.
Put
down a blanket, whatever you're hauling.
This is a great alt. Keep going.
I think you should get rid of the STI. It's the cool hatch, I know, but certainly that would appeal to somebody. We don't know what the value is, and you're guessing $16,000, but it's got value to somebody else who is in that STI hatch-tuned phase of their life. Is it not?
Yeah, true.
It's a niche buyer. You got to find them.
For sure.
It might sit for a while until you sell it, but I do think you need to warm to the idea of selling it, and all those parts, all that money, and all that time and effort you put into the car now becomes a part of your car history.
Mm.
But that's no bad thing. Because you've moved on with your driving career, you've done the BRZ thing, but because you have an Elise, the BRZ needs to go as well.
Yep, I see
it. The BRZ is good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The GR86 and new BRZ are better.
Yes.
And you already have better than both of those because you have the Elise. So the STI goes, the BRZ goes. I do want you to keep the Elise because it is such a special car. I'm not going to say sell it, and you have wedding memories.
Yeah, for sure.
So I do get that. But hang on to the GT2 right now because it is so useful. If you were to sell a third, I would say sell the Stinger too.
Okay.
Sell them in this order. STI goes first, BRZ second, the Stinger goes third. Start selling cars. Do it one at a time.
Yeah.
You know, put the cash away. See how much you get for all the other cars. But you could because you have a brand new Ioniq 6, which it's a lease. That's your hardware store car. It's a lease.
Fair point.
Who cares?
Yeah,
a lease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Throw all the stuff in the Ioniq 6.
Yeah, fair point. I see where you're going.
Because it's a lease. And have it detailed before you hand it back or something.
Just stay under your allowed mileage and you're fine.
Yeah,
that's very funny.
They care about mileage. They don't care about...
That's very funny.
Oh, there's peat moss an inch thick. Just have it detailed before you hand it back.
Did you do lawn work with your Ioniq 6?
What happened? A lawn care business out of the back of your car? You could drive that all the time because you could take that Elise. I think, Todd, if you had the option of no snow, you know, not that much cold weather, and a 9-mile commute, I don't think you'd drive anything else.
I would probably just drive the Elise, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think, Luke, that you're kind of like Todd. You're kind of like that driver because you had the same progression and you discovered the Elise. So I think that gets you down to two cars. And then in 24 months, when that Ioniq goes back and you've had it detailed and they've looked at the odometer and they've cleared you, hopefully, because that is perfect. Your wife's commute is 13 miles.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe I've got it wrong. Maybe
I think that's right. Yeah, it seems like that's right.
Maybe a swap, but the mile's going to stay low. Mm-hmm. So you've got usage for taking that on road trips or commutes. Okay, keep the Stinger for a while and see how three cars feels.
Yeah.
And then you're integrating the EV into your life. But then eventually, I think that Stinger, it won't get driven. if it doesn't get driven, you know, unless it's sentimental to you and you really just can't get rid of it, you need to consider letting that Stinger go too. So that's three cars. Then the fourth will go away. You have the Lotus. And now from there in the future, you can build using the Lotus as the foundation of your car collection. All right. There's going to be so many other cars. Your life and your needs might have changed. I mean,
yeah, for sure.
And there's going to be selection on the market. All the cool new cars that we talk about now, those are going to be used in 2 years. Mm-hmm. The prices hopefully will be lower. Yeah, yeah. Hopefully that we're back to somewhat normal car price behavior. Get rid of those two. Consider the Stinger. The lease ends. They wonder why it's so dirty.
He has a lease and an Elise.
Yes.
Nice. Well done.
That's it. Luke, thank you for writing. We wish you all the best in your car disbursement. You're getting rid, you're paring down, but you're doing it with the thought, the eye towards building it back up in the future. So if you've got a debate like this, write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. Topic Tuesdays, car debates, garage clearouts.
Anything. Yeah, we want to hear it all.
Springtime is here, and good news, everyone. Ceramic liquid wax is now available. It's the most durable liquid wax Griot's has created to date. Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer renews faded trim. It's good for tires, too, and repels water, chemicals, dirt, and UV rays for weeks. Don't forget Foaming Glass Cleaner. That's new, too, which is a professional strength formula for fast, streak-free cleaning. Finally, there's pre-measured car wash pods, so you get the right amount of soap when you use a hose and bucket. It works with foaming cannons and foaming sprayers, too.
Remember, all Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made right here in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 for 10% off everything else on your order. That's G-R-I-O-T-S. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com. Scott's writing in. He's coming in with interesting discussions because they had a hailstorm come through Colorado last summer. And out of he and his wife's three vehicles, two of them got totaled. Scott and his wife have a Chevy Colorado in Colorado. The 2021 Colorado ZR2 was the only one that survived after, listen to this, $20,000 worth of body work. Oh, and that's the car that survived.
The other two were totaled out. They can be awful. Yeah, I've seen this.
So his wife had to replace her 2019 RAV4, and she went with a new Lexus NX350. My guess is she probably loves that. The other car in discussion here was his beloved Fiesta ST, which was destroyed. But insurance gave him more than what he'd paid for it 6 years and 30,000 miles prior. So financially, he was whole. But he really misses having that fun third car. And that's where we are. He's asking about his next third car.
Do you remember in Ocean's 11 when Danny Ocean, George Clooney, was saying to Julia Roberts, this is our second, third anniversary?
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know what second, third car you're looking for, but maybe this will be your second, third, and then your third, third car, and then it could be your fourth, third car. I like the progression.
It's very good, yeah.
Scott, thank you for writing. He says on nice summer days, he would take that Fiesta ST to commute and occasionally take the long way home up the canyon. They do not have kids, but they do have a 65-pound Aussie that comes to work with him.
Hmm.
So no extra space in the Fiesta ST made it practical in addition to the fun factor.
So you could actually chuck your Fiesta ST down a back road with the dog happily in the car with you. The problem is that his wife doesn't ever really like the Fiesta. She said it was bumpy and loud. So that was a problem.
Oh, yeah.
And And even though they are actually both car people, they like the local cars and coffee. They like watching F1. They like driving manual transmission. All of that is wonderful. But over time, the Fiesta had, let's put it kindly, it had worn out its welcome with his wife because of the budget interior and noisy ride.
That's a good car to run a landscaping business out of the back of.
That wouldn't be bad, actually. I would like to see that guy. Rolls up, he's just plasticized the back, yeah, and it's like, all good.
Yeah, it's like a clown car with landscaping stuff coming out of the back.
This is good, man.
At almost 40 years old, he thinks he's ready for something a little nicer or something a little bit more special or unique.
Okay.
He's not really interested in getting a Z3, but his wife won't give it the pass since there's no space for the dog.
Yeah, he'd like one, but there's nowhere for the dog. So that fails. So that means, unfortunately, wherever we're shopping, I love that the dogs keep coming up.
It is
the 65-pound Aussie, since it goes to work with you daily, has to have a place to fit with you and your wife. So we are shopping sports cars for the dog, and then he throws an utter curveball. He's like, you know, while we're at it, both my wife and I actually are inexplicably excited about rat rods. rat what? Rods and the rumble of a V8. And then he corrects himself and he says, but hang on. If the Fiesta was bumpy and loud, you had exactly the thought I did, which is like, what's going on? He said, would the experience of a rat rod be even worse? And the short answer is, yes, it would.
Yes.
If your wife didn't like bumpy and loud Fiesta, rat rod is not the answer.
Suddenly, well, it's my inexplicable 8% love of lifted trucks.
Totally agree. I understand.
Maybe it's dwindled to 7%, but still.
Well, because you haven't gone to SEMA recently.
Yeah,
it'll reset.
True.
It might go to 9 during a SEMA visit. Anyway,
it's this weird thing. Their choices seem to be somewhere along the lines of everything under the sun and no consensus in sight.
Love it.
What completely impractical fun car are they not thinking of that still has room for the dog?
Okay.
I have maybe oversolved this.
Oh, really? Okay.
I have so many choices. I kind of went off the deep end, Scott. So
I've got a few as well. This is good. I look forward to where we overlap.
I instantly started with the Mini Cooper John Cooper Works.
Oh, sure.
Started there. It was a fun car.
Yeah,
fold
the
seats down, dog in the back.
Yep.
I was wondering what you did with your dog, Scott. Did you like bungee him in from all the different directions and he could be like this rider active thing? The dog, you know, you go around the corner and the dog shifts the weight and it helps you go around the corner.
The smart dogs lean.
Yeah.
I've had a couple
of
dogs that lean. Like you can see them in the rearview mirror. They like leaned over. They know what they're doing. They figure it out.
Had a custom bed back there and he's belted in and he's leaning rider active mini. So the dog's like into it too.
I love it. That's funny.
I mean, I kind of went nuts. I thought, well, what else is four doors is kind of hatch for the dog? Well, a GR Corolla Marizo. There's three doors to access the not back seat. You realize this? There's three doors
that is a very good point.
Access this hatch area that isn't a back seat.
That's a very good point. We have three doors to nothingness. That's a very good point.
Okay, to a little bit of reality, and that is the 2007 to 2013 BMW E90 M3.
Mm.
Four doors, V8, manual transmission, space for the dog. But as a third car, because it's your second, third car.
Yes, the second, third car, yes.
It's great. It's thirsty. It might be a maintenance hog, but it's a great third car. They're less expensive nowadays, the higher mileage ones. But again, this is not the primary vehicle. This is not the primary fun car. It's the third car.
Yeah.
So that's why it came into my consideration list. I also looked at 1999 BMW M Coupes, the M Shoe.
Oh, sure. I actually remember seeing somebody with a massive dog in the hatch of one of those.
Totally
works.
That's
a very good point. I hadn't thought of that. That's very good.
I mean, you suggest it's got Z3, and my mind instantly went to the coupe for the dog.
Yep. Oh, that's very good. I like that.
2005 to 2008 Audi S4 Avant Quattro. That had the 4.2 liter V8 and a manual transmission. For the same reasons above, you could look at an Audi RS4, but that Avant, a manual V8 wagon.
Yeah, that's rare and very cool.
You might say, oh, well, there's going to be maintenance and oh, this goes wrong and that goes. Mm-hmm. It's the third car. That's why it's on
the
list.
That's very good.
I'm not suggesting this as the primary. That led me to the 2009 to 2016 Audi S4 Avant. It loses the V8, but you do get the supercharged V6.
Mm-hmm.
Still a manual, still a wagon.
Mm.
A little bit newer. Then I thought, well, I'm in wagon land, and let's go back to the thing that we always suggested for years, the 2012 Cadillac CTS-V wagon. Those are a lot of money still, I think.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
What a special, unique, manual V8, rumbly wagon, dog, people, coolness. I thought about that manual Cayenne we've talked about for so long.
Yeah, early Cayennes and manual,
You could do your own Cayenne Overlander build, and it could be dog-friendly and have graphics on it, and it could be like the dog-themed thing.
The dog ramp that comes out of the back.
Yeah.
I get it. I understand,
You could do the manual Cayenne thing. And then finally, I just threw caution to the wind because I'm going to suggest Ferrari FF. I mean, what a perfect dog car. Tell me I'm wrong. How wrong am I? It's the perfect dog car.
You know, would the dog like it? Probably. Would you like it? Probably. Can you afford it? I have no idea.
Yeah, see, there's the manual.
It's very,
but
very
I'm
good.
Suggesting it as a third car.
I love it. It's very good.
Maintenance and cost and blah, blah, blah.
Third car.
The third car anyway. That'll be your 16th third car, maybe. We'll have to get through the second through 15th third cars.
This is very good. Scott, I have a few here as well. I love Paul's list. I have a few here as well. Again, the rat rod, I think, is the wrong idea, but it does influence one of my weird choices later. Your interest in a V8 rumble and the rat rod. And the other thing that was said here in the middle of this email, Scott, is that you never felt like you could take the Fiesta ST to Cars and Coffee. And I don't agree with that. You could have. The people that know, know.
That's
true.
The
Fiesta ST is a true enthusiast car. especially if you get one in a cool color. I don't know what yours was, but especially in the cool colors, those are absolutely a Cars and Coffee worthy car. Now, and people aren't stopping and going, I've never seen one, but people are like, Fiesta STs are great. So anyway, but I thought about the fact you want to go to Cars and Coffee and you're probably going to take the dog. So
yeah,
a few things here. Mainly 2+2s is where I landed. The used BMW 2 Series. I don't know what your budget is. You actually didn't clarify, but you've got plenty of options.
See, that's why I suggested an FF, because he mistakenly did not include his budget.
But the used BMW 2 Series, the last gen, in any flavor we drove it in, from the 228i all the way up to the M240, was excellent. If you get the right spec, it's a superb car. You can get it in manual. It drives very well. That is a fantastic car that can be nice for date night or pup jumps in the back. It's no big deal. While I'm dealing with 2+2s, I have to say it, GR86 or BRZ.
I mean, the dog can learn to lean.
Well, and the dog can sit in the back seats. They're perfect for a dog because the dog doesn't have legs behind the seats behind you. Even if you slide your seats all the way back, the dog still has a space to be in. And if for some reason that isn't enough space for your dog, then you drop that seat and it has the shelf, including the entire back trunk area. Mm. BRZ or GR86 would absolutely work here and you would get a really great actual manual transmission, rear-wheel drive, enthusiast car with proper balance. Look at our prior car debate with Luke. That helped him discover great driving rear-wheel drive cars. So
I still think he's going to need to bungee the dog in the back to prevent the weight shift.
Possibly. So there's that as well. But then I thought of two others that feel, for different reasons, to be the perfect car for you. One is, you like that Fiesta ST. I was trying to think along the lines of what's like Fiesta ST. I like your Mini, by the way, Paul. But I went here. Veloster N.
Veloster.
There's a door for the dog.
Oh, that's great.
The dog has a door. You
that's
and your wife and
great.
The dog, everybody has their own designated
Ooh,
door.
I really like that.
Veloster N is an incredibly fun car, and we've said on camera, actually, that it feels like it's from the same direction as the Fiesta ST. It has that kind of playfulness. It is a nicer place to be than the Fiesta ST. It's more usable. It's got better tech. Mm-hmm. But it has that kind of visceral fun that the Fiesta ST always got away with. And it's quirky like the Fiesta ST.
That's really
three doors,
good.
One for the dog.
And then once you start opening only the third door, the dog will be trained.
He oh, yeah.
Know, you know, okay.
This is my door.
Exactly right.
Yes, absolutely. My dogs know which door of the Cayenne they get in. They're like, I get in on this side. That's exactly
so
how it works.
If you open the other door, do they not get in?
They'd be confused. They really,
really?
They'd be a little confused. Like, but don't we get in on that side?
That's not my door.
Especially the older dog Wasatch is like, that's not my door.
That goes to the same place.
Anyway, yeah. Uh-huh. So anyway, so that's the main car, I think, for you is the Veloster N. But then I have a wild card, and the wild card was connecting the dots. You wanted something kind of unique. What about a rat rod? What about a V8 rumble? But you need 2+2.
Hmm.
It's not a rat rod, but you can see how I got there. The early 2000s Pontiac GTO. You don't see them.
You don't see
they
them.
They are unique.
Cheap.
They are cheap. They Ish. Have it's a Chevy Corvette running gear. Hmm. But you've got a 2+2 build. You get V8 out of it. It's a wild card, but I have to throw it out there.
It's muscle car threads that lead to the
exactly,
rat rod.
Exactly
thinking.
Right. It's
okay,
not there, but it you can see the pieces of it.
I still think you need to seriously consider an FF Ferrari, Scott, because
FFs for everyone.
People will see yes, the sure. dog in the mm-hmm. back, and mm-hmm. they'll be like, that's why Ferrari built this mm-hmm. car. I totally get it now. Scott, you've solved the problem. You've got a long list. We wish your dog happy sitting, happy hunting,
yes.
happy leaning.
You have to take the dog with you, apparently, to test all these things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sure owners will love to see you coming, but you've got wagons, you've got sedans, you've got 2+2s.
Mm-hmm.
Please let us know what you get. And if you're like Scott, let us know if there's a debate that influenced you, even though we weren't able to cover it. We'd love to hear what you ended up getting.
Joel is writing in from Minnesota with one of those questions that, frankly, we just love. We get it a lot. But we just love it. He says he's having a debate with himself about rear-wheel drive sports car in snowy Minneapolis. He's owned two manual WRXs. They've been a blast to drive. The all-wheel drive gives him comfort in all conditions in the winter months with good winter tires. But he's considering, it's like a worm in his brain, the idea of getting a car with more power, like the new Mustang GT or the Z car.
Ooh.
Can I get away with these cars and winter tires, or do I have to settle for all-wheel drive cars like the Golf R or Corolla GR that have less power, but he knows he's safe in wintertime? What are our thoughts? I have many, but what are our thoughts?
Safe in wintertime. Mm. Safe is mm-hmm. that word that is, in this case, so subjective, isn't it?
It absolutely is, yes.
I mean, we agree, safe, good.
Mm-hmm.
But what does that exactly mean? It means sticking to the ground, getting traction in nearly all situations. There's, you know, times in snow and ice, your traction is reduced.
Yeah.
But the main thing in winter driving, what is it? It's braking, isn't it, Joel?
Yes, thank
you. It's slowing down and braking. You can get speed in any car, truck, SUV, car, doesn't matter. But it's the braking that matters the most, the slowing down, the ability to get stopped that matters the most. Mm-hmm. Yes, you're in Minneapolis, but there's not a lot of mountains there.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
There's
a
lot of mountains in the Rockies here in Utah, that kind of thing. So getting traction up a hill, hills are a very big deal here. You've got to get traction.
Yeah, yeah,
so
sure.
Certainly getting going is an issue. But for the most part, I would think stopping is the biggest thing that you'll have to deal with. If you're on the right winter tires and your center of gravity is low to the ground, unlike everybody else. We drove a GR86 all winter long and cackled driving around pickup trucks and stopped SUVs.
Your 928, my twin turbo Nissan 300ZX, all went through blizzards.
They actually did.
Okay,
yes.
But on winter tires. The thing, and I'm going to build exactly on where you are, Paul, the thing that everybody thinks about when they think about winter driving, it fascinates me about this, is just, well, how do I get going? And all I think about is, how do I stop?
How do you get stopped?
Now, I have seen the person, we've all seen the person, it's typically some sort of pickup truck that's just sitting in an intersection doing that slow circle because every time they touch the gas, the car just moves sideways and doesn't go forward, and eventually they're just doing slow donuts in the middle of the intersection. I've seen that. Everybody's seen that. It is terrible. I get it. Yes, a rear-wheel drive car doesn't have the traction of an all-wheel drive car. Neither does a front-wheel drive car. I'm not arguing the traction discussion, getting going. I get it. But you can do it. Now, a Mustang GT or a Z car, you're gonna have to be careful. You're gonna have to adapt your driving. But frankly, you need to adapt your driving for winter anyway. So unless you're dealing with hugely deep snow, we have proven. I mean, my Elise in the snow is fantastic because it doesn't weigh anything. I put winter tires on it, and I'll outstop everybody. Okay, because I don't weigh anything. Look at our piece. It's actually on our test drive channel. We put an RF Miata against a Nissan Rogue.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
The weight of the Miata was a massive factor. The Rogue had all-wheel drive. Okay. So my point here is you can absolutely do it. There will be moments when it is difficult for you to get going. I'm not going to lie to you. There will be moments where you're like, I barely touched the gas. Why is this spinning? You don't have all the wheels working for you trying to find traction.
Sure.
That is a problem. Okay. You want a limited slip differential. That is going to help you immensely in winter conditions. So make sure the car you're getting is you're speccing it that way. If what you're worried about is getting going, then yeah, you're going to fight harder, but you would in front wheel drive too. But the thing I think you would enjoy is controlled slides, because they're the greatest thing ever in the snow. And rear wheel drive cars, the greatest thing
it
ever.
It is the greatest thing.
It transforms every corner. There's that. And then the fact that I think you're going to feel surprisingly safe when you need to stop.
Agreed, yes.
The huge trucks around you, you're going to be worried about them stopping as fast as you can.
Yeah.
So it's doable, but it requires real driver decision-making.
Our friend Andrew, known as Dammit Patton on Instagram, says, are the new Hyundai Kona's taillights the worst taillight design on sale today? It's horrendous. Wait till you see the EV version where the fenders are not blacked out. Wait till you see the taillights then. Maybe you think they're bad now.
Hopefully he's seen that version, because it's not good news. It's really not good news, yeah.
Bella B, 1029 on Instagram, is talking about our best of manufacture episodes currently going on. Got the thinking going here about Lucid. Lucid has the Air, their S-Class competitor, and the Gravity, which is the big SUV, yes. What other cars would we like to see in Lucid's portfolio? Personally, Bella B thinks they could do an awesome electric GT like the Mercedes SL or GT. The upmarket vibe, it would fit their upmarket vibe? Maybe. Right now, Lucid needs to concentrate on selling the Air.
And surviving.
Just surviving right now. They need to concentrate on getting the cars built, production, to satisfy Wall Street. And also, they need to satisfy their investors. They don't need to add product to their portfolio. And I know Tony Stark said sometimes you got to run before you can walk, but not in this case, because they've added the Gravity to a sea of EV SUVs.
Yeah.
And they're not selling Airs. It's not like Lucid is currently selling Airs and they're going gangbusters and we're just selling cars and we've got a good, solid monthly sales report month after month. Yeah. And okay, now we've added the Gravity and okay, that's added to us. That's not happening currently. Mm. So adding a very niche GT product to their portfolio puts them in the Karma camp. Karma has 1,000 horsepower GT, really sweet looking EV.
Sure.
That I don't know who it's for. I'm not sure Lucid, potential Lucid buyers are realizing that Lucids are for them. I'm not sure that the general public realizes like a Lucid might be for me. Their sales number hasn't proved that at this point.
Yeah, and they have to come down market, not up market to survive. I hate to say it.
They have to come down, yes. So a high-end GT, I mean, it sounds cool.
It does. It sounds like it matches their brand, I have to admit.
And
yes.
It kind of does right now. But their brand was optimistic, we'll say. A little too optimistic.
EV optimism, ladies and gentlemen. That is definitely a thing.
Thanks for the question.
This is one I think may split you and I, but I'm just curious about it. Seth says, question, 1991 Porsche 928 S4 with an auto or a 2011 Lotus Evora with a manual? Those are two quite different cars. So my question is, what are you using it for?
Yeah.
Okay, because those are very different cars. I'm going to definitely say the 2011 Lotus Evora manual. I think that is, of those two, definitely my choice. But I'm confused, Seth, as to what you're buying it for. If you're buying it for a classic driving experience and maybe a road trip and this kind of thing, maybe the 928 starts climbing up. But if it's your fun car, 2011 Evora.
I mean, I don't really recommend 928s to anyone. So
you simultaneously love them and don't recommend them. That, you are very good about that.
They are not for everyone. I don't like them in the automatic. I was bummed, just like most people were, to discover them in an automatic. They're okay, but they remain a lazy GT car at that point. With a manual, I think they kind of come to life.
Yeah.
So with a manual, I'd choose that, but that's not the choice here. So I'm going Evora, and Evoras are really cool. Doesn't matter the power. Agreed. With the manual, they are really cool. So I'd go actually Lotus in this case.
Look at you. Kirk Meyer says, what makes a more fun daily for a first-time driver, a Golf or a Mini Cooper? I have to say Mini Cooper. That's the more fun car of those two. They'd both be good first-time cars, but the Mini Cooper will be more fun.
Over on Instagram, Andrew3DM asks my perspective on clear taillights. Andrew's never been much of a fan of them. He doesn't think it does much for the design of the car. It really is car specific here. And when Porsche gives you the option to do the clear taillights, they're a little bit smoked and they do add a bit of a sinister look to them. Sometimes, mostly on sports cars, they look really good. But for the most part, I like to see a really cool red LED light. I mean, the lens, I like to see that. It, mainly because it's a breakup. It's a graphic breakup on the surface of the car. And if it's close to the same color or it's clear, it muddies that graphic. It doesn't make that thing stand out. Certainly when it's lit up, yes. But if it is red, it's here's the graphic and that is the signature look, just like a headlight. If the headlights are too small for the proportions of the car, they're buried or they're weird, like Hyundai's and some Kias, it doesn't look good. It doesn't have that face. Same with taillights that supports the strong rear of the car, and it's a nice graphic breakup. And red, the red taillights look good with practically everything. I mean, shoot, even a lot of the Bugattis, you know, those are the taillights. And that signifies that power, you know, the braking power. So I do like them. Clear taillights are a bit of an acquired taste. They work on some Porsches, but I think I'd go red mostly.
So many great questions. We got a lot to cover here. Troy Miner 7 says, is it normal to be scared of dealerships? He's looking to buy a new truck, but he's too scared of the dealership salespeople. How do we navigate this when we're buying a vehicle? Troy, there's two things, and I've said this before. First off, let's say you have found the perfect truck for you. And let's say you're going to have it even as short as like a couple of years. You're talking about one bad day in the life of something you will enjoy.
Okay.
So even if it goes terribly, and I hope it doesn't, you're talking about one bad day. But I'm going to tell you the only thing I know of to help you navigate this situation. Go in expecting it to take much longer than it should. Just steel yourself to that reality. I should be in and out in a couple hours. No, you will not. So that's the first thing. Second thing, know exactly what you want and know potentially everything there already is to know about it. Even if you need to test drive it elsewhere before you go to a different dealer, you need to walk in with lots of information because most, now there are exceptions to what I'm about to say, but most people at car dealers are salespeople first and car people second. So if you come in with a lot of knowledge about a specific vehicle you want for these reasons, and here is why I'm shopping, then the salesperson doesn't become a salesperson anymore. They are the facilitator for you to getting what you already know you want. And that changes the dynamic. It's a subtle shift, but you don't need their information. You need their help. And that's a different situation. So that's my recommendation there. Hopefully it helps.
I would just add to that, that the salespeople work for you.
Yes.
Walk in and you're the boss. You're not working for them. And you need to keep that in mind. You walk in, they need to earn your business. And if they don't earn your business, you can walk out.
You have to be willing to walk away. Absolutely. Yep.
Over on Facebook, Michael Weitzel asks me to give a design brief for an Alfa Romeo 4C replacement. We've got to first start with what is the 4C currently, or what was the market? A hyper niche car. It was not for everybody. It did have good style. The original concepts were a little strange, and Alfa sorted that out with a different headlight design. But I do like how they look. They're really striking. They look a little bit too stubby, and to my eye, they look a little cheap because of the proportions, because of the too stubby proportions with elegant, beautiful Italian styling on top. There was a little bit of a disconnect. It's an expensive car, but it didn't feel that way. It didn't initially appear that way. I want them to do kind of the opposite. I want that, wow, it seems like this is a really expensive car, but it is good value.
Mm.
But to do that, the 4C is already a niche player. Let's let it be niche and even more niche.
Okay.
Maybe it should be a dual clutch, but in my mind, it should be the classic recipe, because as a niche car, Alfa doesn't need to look at it to be a volume seller. So let's cater to enthusiasts, but let's cater to Alfa enthusiasts.
Okay. All right.
Let's just simply do straight up a manual transmission, mid-engine, rear-wheel drive, beautiful sports car. Let's make that the car that isn't too expensive. It doesn't have a lot of amenities. I mean, I know it didn't, but that would be in keeping with the next generation. It's not fully loaded with all this stuff, but it does have to be nice enough. I mean, I hate to say it, but Cayman really dialed it in this segment. It's hard to compete against a Cayman because of all the flavors that you have, all the way up to a racing version, a very high power version. What is the ratio between like sound deadening and cabin comfort versus still being a hardcore true enthusiast sports car? But they don't have to justify it necessarily. It just has to handle better than the current 4C does, and maybe that means a chassis change to do it. But the power plant can't sound cheap. I hate to say it. Sound is such a big equation for sports cars. It has to be a V6, I feel like. It's got to be forced induction, but it's got to be such a classic recipe. I mean, I don't know where Stellantis gets the engine from to put in the back of this thing, but I feel like it does need to be something bigger than a four-cylinder. I mean, I see it competing against an Amira. The Amira is the right recipe.
Yeah, it is.
Still sports car, still stripped down, but the interior is quite nice. Mm-hmm. It's still quite a nice place to be in. V6, forced induction, manual transmission, the classic sports car recipe.
Yeah.
It needs to almost compete directly against that Amira.
That's good. I like it.
That's where we're starting. Michael, I'm starting there. Make me want a sketch.
Bob McCormick on Facebook asked an interesting question. The more I thought about this, the harder it got, but I think I have an answer.
Okay.
We're hosting a dinner. We each get to invite three people, living or dead. But then here's the twist. Who would you invite to make the most exciting automotive conversations around the table?
Okay.
So three people, living or dead, to start a really interesting car conversation. I actually picked four, I have to admit, because there were two I was deciding against. But I'll give you my top three first, and I'll give you my alt. Top three are Gordon Murray.
He's on my list. That's funny.
Preston Tucker.
Oh, that's good.
And Mate Rimac. That's my top three.
Wow.
And my alt is Zora Duntov.
That's a really good mix between Mate and Preston from two opposite ends of the car industry.
But they're all guys that started companies, essentially. Gordon Murray, Preston Tucker, Mate Rimac all started an alternate car, essentially, company. And their perspective not only on cars and engineering, but just being the outsider is fascinating to me.
Ayrton Senna is on my list.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
Paul Newman's on my list.
Sure.
Certainly Gordon Murray. There's not really a great through line there. I like your through line better. But these are definitely influential in the world of cars. I mean, Ayrton Senna was, of course.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
The top. Paul Newman was great, but could go either direction.
He could talk about a lot of stuff. Yeah.
He could talk about racing. He could talk about cars in general, but I think his perspective would be interesting. And certainly Gordon Murray on pushing the car industry to still make something that is so notable. I mean, I hate to say it, but I compare him to somebody like Henrik Fisker. Henrik Fisker has also left a mark on the the automotive industry, but certainly in a different way. And it's always, car companies are always named after their founders. Practically, they're always a name of an individual.
Yeah, good point.
So that individual's contribution to the world of cars and that, you know, how you see their product and how they did it. Fisker has one approach. Gordon Murray has another. I guess that's my thinking, but I like having a race car driver's approach because I wonder if Ayrton Senna's approach would just be racing. Because I don't think he'd care about any of the cars that the rest of us do.
Interesting question.
I don't think he would. Yeah, I don't think he'd know much or care.
Okay.
I mean, the NSX a little bit. He was brought in for development, but, you know, and he added his, you know, he did make it great, but you're still not starting with a race car. It's still more of a street car.
Yeah.
I don't know that he'd care about all of the fun cars that we all think about and talk about. It was just so singularly focused. I guess that's what I get out of him.
Pat writes in on Instagram and says, what form of unreliable is the Alfa Giulia QV?
Oh my gosh.
What form of unreliable? He said, so we're talking about the Quadrifoglio. Is it just maintenance heavy and sensitive, or is it something like, you know, are there gremlins? Pat, look, I haven't owned one. I don't know. Everyone I know that's owned an Alfa Quadrifoglio, Giulia Quadrifoglio, has thoroughly enjoyed it. We have heard anecdotal commentary from people that have written to us that have had perfect experiences and bad experiences. I'll put it to you this way. I would buy a used Alfa Quadrifoglio with no more fear than buying an M3, which also has fear. Okay. I think they are equivalently questionable. One of the other things we've heard from a few people is that they feel like the stock battery in the Quadrifoglio was not big enough, and that was the source of multiple electrical gremlins. And people put in heavy-duty batteries, and a lot of their issues went away. We've just heard this. We haven't seen it personally. But I do know that every single one we had ran flawlessly, and other lower trims ran fine. So we've never had an issue, even though there were some cars. I remember one of the original QV press cars bricked itself, and Alfa couldn't figure out why. So there's certainly question marks, but again, I don't think considered any more unreliable than some of the other high-performance cars.
Box driver David Instagram asked me what tires I use on the back of the Cayman. How many miles do they last? Box driver David has a little over 4,000 miles on PS4s, and they're already looking like they're half gone with casual driving only. You're not wrong. This is why Porsche's handle so great, is because of that toe-in and because they just chew through tires.
And did he buy the pre-worn Porsche ones too, is my other question?
If you bought the N0 designation, then you bought these slightly shaved tires for more money that I think it's in the carcass
have less,
construction,
less life.
And it's a little bit less life, but it's up to Porsche's spec. I'm really hoping to get some Vredestein, some of their new Vortes on the back, their high-performance Vortes on the car, and we shall see, because I've had Goodyears. It came with Goodyear F1 tires when I got the car, but that was part of the factory spec, and even though you think it should only come with one tire, car manufacturers are well within their rights and they're smart to spec the same kind of spec'd tire, which is why I think Porsche does that N0 designation. But they have multiple tire companies just in case one tire company can't supply the tires. If they have a supplier issue, they can still sell cars.
Yep.
That's totally fine. But I didn't really like the F1s, and so I went to the Michelins. But like I said, I'm hoping to get the Vredesteins on there and see how they do this summer. But yeah, the Porsches chew through tires. Everybody's wondering, like, wow. wide tires, and even with casual driving, they chew through tires. It's just part of that suspension setup. You get the fun out of the car, but you got to pay for it.
Jared Rose 1 asks a question that is, it's very personal, and it almost feels like a topic Tuesday, but I think I can cover it, at least from my perspective, pretty quickly. He says, have we ever got to the point where our interest in cars just started to wane? And if so, how did we handle it? Now, first off, Jared, I want to acknowledge this. As adults, as human adults, you're going to go through ebbs and flow in your activities and your interests, okay? Very rarely is the person in their 20s going to have the same activities as that same person in their 60s or 70s. It happens, but it's rare, okay? You have I'd rather be into this now, whatever it is. Okay. So if you have a natural progression where you grow out of cars, we've had plenty of people that have written the podcast that just grew into cars. They're mm-hmm. like, I've never liked cars and now I'm 50 and oh my gosh, cars. This has happened.
True,
okay.
Yes.
So there's that ebb and flow anyway, and that's natural. And it's not something to stress out about. If any of your activities start to be less interesting to you, that's okay.
Yeah.
I would say the downside is you didn't replace it with something else. You just decided you'd like to sit home more. I mean, if you have hobbies, let's trade hobbies for hobbies. Let's not trade hobbies for Netflix.
Sitting, yeah.
Okay, that's not the right. And I like movies as much as anybody, but I'm just saying, let's have hobbies, okay? But I'm going to give you the flip side, and that is, yes, I've absolutely felt this. We've done this show for 17 years. I am a car freak, but there's sometimes I like this more than others. Sometimes it's a job. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like, I don't really want to go driving today. That does happen, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I will say, for me personally, this is why we road trip.
Yeah.
Because especially now with cars, there's this almost required secondary part of car love now, and that is the car online component. Are you watching the YouTube videos? Are you in any forums? Do you follow any Reddit pages? And before long, I feel like all of those things, even the best intended ones, just kill car love because you're not driving the thing anymore.
True.
And if you get on a road trip, this is at least what I found. If I get on a road trip, I can't interact with the online community at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I get away from the worst part of cars, which is I have to drive it to get to this place to do the errands that make up my life, which leads to traffic and parking. And why is that person such an idiot driver or whatever it is? Now you're road tripping. You're actually, and we've talked about this on all of our road trips, and I've had this experience on every single one of them where I am somewhere I would have never seen if I hadn't been in a car. It took me to an adventure or an experience or a place where I'm like, not only is this cool, but without a car, I wouldn't be here. And that resets me every single time.
There's a component to it, though, which is so funny and ironic because you'll use a car to get to the national park, the destination, the hotel, the beautiful vista, whatever that is. But then when you're there, what happens in the parking lot? You're at this cool location.
Mm.
And somebody will walk up to you and say, cool car, man. And you're right back into the conversation.
You're right back in. You're right. Yes.
But then you can say, well, I chose this car because I wanted to do the journey and have fun. And also it brought me to the destination.
Yes.
It's both.
Yes.
It's not just a horrible car and not horrible, but you know what I mean? Just a boring experience.
You can drive anywhere in the world in an RV. Yeah.
Yes. But then the journey is not as much fun.
Yeah. Agreed.
And let's have fun on the journey too.
Absolutely.
And then let's enjoy the destination. But then people will marvel at you enjoyed the journey getting here. It should just be an SUV or a minivan.
Yeah.
You enjoyed actually getting here. I mean, I know we're all here and enjoying it, but you brought a fun journey car.
Mm.
That's not what most people do. How are you different? Tell me. That's what they're asking. They're not asking you about the car.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking you the question behind the question. Why did you bring that car?
That's good.
How
that's
do you good. Think yep. differently? But then you can put that aside. And of course, you're at the destination and let it go for a while. Yeah. And then hopefully that refreshes your interest. Guys, thank you for all your questions. We really appreciate it. If there's some we did not get to, please keep asking. We'll look forward to subsequent podcasts. But we've got, I think, one more best of series.
Yep, we're almost
done.
We're enjoying it, though. And if you guys have other Topic Tuesdays series or lists you'd like us to talk through, we're happy to listen to those, too. Some of you have sent them in already. We'd love to hear more of those. We're just excited to keep having these conversations with you. And my favorite thing about the Topic Tuesdays is we never really solve it, but we do enjoy it.
Thank you, as always, for your patronage. We look forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.